performers, as they are both street performers on the street and in the New York City subway system. You can go to democracynow.org for that part two, as well as the part two of the conversation with the anti-death penalty activist Sister Helen Prejean, talking about the case of Richard Glossop and so much more. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Gesder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresaina, Tammy Warren, Nectarina Nadura, Sam Alcock, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
When I first came to Brookhaven Town, way, hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around. Way, hey, 90.1. Then one day I turned on the dial. Way, hey, 90.1. There I found music to make me smile.
Way, hey, 90.1.
I waited for a legal ID.
Way, hey, 90.1.
The DJ said WUSD.
Way, hey, 90.1.
They start each day with the rising sun.
Way, hey, 90.1.
Don't ever finish till after day is done.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you want good music to hear.
Way, hey, 90.1.
There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you like the sounds, do take a look.
Way, hey, 90.1.
At WUSB Stony
Brook. Hey, hey, hey. And this is WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, and to the entire world on WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. I'm Andrew Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Indeed, right here.
And happy Tuesday to you.
And you.
It's fair weather outside. Fair, you know, just.
Increasing in temperature, I'd say.
Giving up on snow.
Springing towards summer.
Not happening.
Yeah, snow is finished. And here we join you.
Yeah. A lot to talk about. Never know where to jump off the bus and start our run. Let's start with some good news. You like that? Some good news?
What kind of good news?
Well, because we'll be through it so fast, and then we'll be into all the bad news. So we might as well get started with something that we can share about a little bit.
Please share.
And that's something good that's happening fairly close to home here on Long Island. Our friends in Syosset, a village to the west in Nassau County, I believe. The Syosset Central School District has voted unanimously, they did this last night, to retire its Braves mascot and name in compliance with a state order that we discussed here a few weeks ago by the Board of Regents to remove Native American mascots and imagery from public schools. Well done. The State Education Department banned indigenous names, logos, or mascots last month. The ban affects more than a dozen districts on Long Island, which must adopt resolutions to retire names and mascots by June the 30th. Districts have until the 2024-25 school year to change their names and remove Native American imagery. Now, Syosset has followed several other districts that have adopted resolutions to change names and logos. Syosset board members estimated making changes at Syosset High School's football field, end zone, and scoreboard would cost about $70,000. Which is a lot, but how much did they spend on the scoreboard, you know, to start with? It's all kinds of things that money gets spent on that we would not believe. This is something that is certainly worth it, long overdue. The Syosset School Board did not comment on the resolution except for technical changes and noting they would consult state legislators to seek grant funding to cover the expenses, which is entirely possible. Board members said they would apply for state funding, noting the name change expenses qualifies for state aid for capital improvements. The lone public speaker at Monday's meeting was Melissa Foreman of Woodbury, who said it was time for the district to move on and retire the name and Braves mascot. The state did not issue this directive to control our local school districts. This stereotyping affects academic and stereotyping by other Native American students and undermines their educational experiences, she said. The symbols and images teach non-Native American children it's okay to perpetuate culturally abusive behavior. It is the board's responsibility to maintain a climate of acceptance. Now, school districts that do not comply with the state's edict could face loss of state funding and removal of school officers, including elected school board members. The order affects 55 school districts throughout New York with Native American mascots. The state also did not allow any vestiges of names or logos, particularly from districts that had a tradition of using Native American imagery, according to district officials. Some board members had sought to continue using the name Brave by dropping the S, but officials said that was too closely aligned with the previous name and mascot. Weren't kidding anybody. Monday's school board meeting was held with no debate compared to an April meeting where residents and board members were divided about following the state order or fighting to preserve the school's name. We kind of knew there was a very small chance we'd keep the name, said school board president Thomas Rotolo during the April board meeting. In an effort to fight for the community and give us every chance, we went through the rulings, but at this point, I don't think there's much more we can do. We don't take this lightly. We understand the multi-generational attachment to this name, but at the same time, we're moving forward to represent the community. This article today in Newsday. And it's a good move. It really is. It's the right move. I hope all the other districts on Long Island will do the same thing and not be a bunch of crybabies about this. It's, ask the Native American community what they prefer. And you will find that by a very strong majority and a quite vocal one, this is offensive to them, to have imagery, to have names that basically take advantage of their community, of their history. So let's do something better.
Yeah, it's a very small price, I think, in history and in time, and it will be the right way to go. And the costs in itself are a hurdle, but they're not the only thing here. This symbolically means so much more. And to find the resources, I think, easily and make the change is the statement that needs to be made, and not find it to be too burdensome, because it truly is a significant statement, and to make it hard and impossible maybe is kind of overlooking what this really means.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, there are those few people left who are saying that this is done to honor Native Americans, which I don't really think there are many people who will believe that. And especially if the Native American population does not believe that, then you really don't have anything to go on. So if you hear those kinds of voices, treat them with all the doubt and disdain you can muster, because they do not represent anyone except their own suspicious motives, which whatever they are. And here's the thing, you know, Long Island has a bad reputation. We really do, and we're going to talk about some of that tonight. Remember the Proud Boys outside the drag queen story hour in New York City? How people were shouting at them to go back to Long Island without knowing they were from Long Island. And I think they probably were, but the point is, Long Island is getting this horrible reputation as being this bastion for the right wing and racist and white supremacist and all kinds of things. I mean, you know, look at the people we elect here in Suffolk County. It's shameful. It really is shameful. And we can do better. And this is an indication that we are doing better. But I'm going to counter that right away with some bad news. You enjoyed the good news, Kyle, because that was it. That's pretty much it.
Well, yeah, thanks. Okay. I'm happy. I'm eager to hear about more districts. And
I don't want to overdo it. I don't want to be too much of a...
I passed by middle school. There's so many different schools with these...
Not a happy show.
Go ahead.
It's a dramatic... You
but
know,
the change is coming.
We're downbeat.
Okay.
We know it.
I'm ready. That was such a high. Now, take me down.
Roosevelt School District on Long Island has filed a notice of claim on behalf of its boys basketball team. This official notice of claim was filed against the Lynbrook School District, the Wantagh School District, and the Nassau County Public High School Athletic Association, claiming they all failed to intervene when unruly crowds from both schools hurled hateful and racist comments at the young athletes. This is quite a story. There's video of this, too. It's really disturbing. Leaders are demanding a formal apology, staff diversity training, and an undisclosed amount of money for attorney fees following what they say has been a history of racial intimidation. The news comes after a photo captured from the February 17th boys basketball game between Roosevelt and Wantagh High School sparked attention. It shows what appears to be a large group of young white men wearing white shirts. This is according to Frederick Brewington, the attorney for the district. All have their backs on opponents. They're in the audience. They all have their backs on opponents in a place where sportsmanship is supposed to rule. Now, it doesn't end there. A video then shows the game running, shows rather the group running to the floor after the game. At the end of the game, they bum rush the entire floor, make it completely unsafe. It's like a mob. The students from Roosevelt had to be ushered into a locker room because they feared for their own safety. Now, perhaps I should point out at this point that the Roosevelt School District is majority black and Latino, like a big majority. And these other districts, not so much. So there's that. The Roosevelt Union Free School District filed a notice of claim against the Wantagh School District and the Nassau County Public High School Athletic Association. The Lynbrook School District is named in the document for another incident at a game that took place on February 15th. At both games, students were allegedly called racial slurs. Roosevelt leaders allege Wontaw and Lynbrook leaders failed to intervene and discipline the students during the game, violating Section 8 Code of Conduct. Roosevelt is seeking a formal written apology and demands training for all staff named in the notice of claim. For the superintendent, Deborah L. Wortham, this is a personal, she says, as she says, there's a history of racial intimidation. What's significant about this one is that the multiple two districts came together to make our students feel uncomfortable. So, yeah, these things are happening. And when you see the picture of just all these people with their backs turned, you know, kind of reminiscent of how cops treated de Blasio whenever he would walk down a street, they turned their backs on him because they fancied that he was anti-cop or just not pro-cop enough. Whatever. It's ridiculous then, it's ridiculous now. But to teach kids that this is how you you start a game, by turning your backs on the opponents as if they're not even worthy of being acknowledged. You know, this is while before a single ball has been dribbled. And this is the level of hostility. And then it just continued and degraded from there. And to have nothing done about it, to have nobody say anything or show any kind of disciplinary action towards students that are doing this, and why are they doing this? Where'd they get the message? Where'd they get the indication that this is okay behavior? Well, they got it from somewhere, and it's not being dismissed. It's not being discouraged. And I'll just bet right now, at this moment, there are a bunch of people in Wontaw and in Lynbrook that are upset that these people in Roosevelt are taking it to this place. They don't get it. We need to make sure they do.
Yeah, seriously, leadership at the schools have to, like, realize, you know, this is coming from a sick fascination and overall misunderstanding amongst students, amongst, you know, these rivalries, you know, spiraling into something that involves these kinds of stereotypes and labels. And yeah, someone should be able to step up in that moment and you know, call out and decry this kind of disrespect, because it's unsportsmanlike, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, wouldn't officials and stuff want to say, like, hey, you know, we can't really have a fair game if there isn't sort of mutual respect? I feel like coaches and stuff should maybe be, you know, explaining a little bit of how this played out.
You know, in European football, when a crowd hurls racial epithets at a player from a different team, the team is held accountable for the behavior of their fans.
Right.
And they are penalized. The same thing should hold true for high schools, because obviously, you know, the fans that show up, most of the fans that show up will be for the particular high school that they are in. And obviously there are people cheering for the other team that might feel like they're in a dangerous place. As you know, I was reading accounts from parents who were worried about getting out of that place safely at the end of the game when all those white kids in white shirts stormed the field or the court. That should not be happening. And to have nothing said, nothing done about it by the people in charge, that's almost as shameful as the act itself.
Right, right. Like condoning it almost in not acknowledging and creating a sort of teaching or sort of lesson to go along with this. Like, hey, this is why this isn't exactly the way to represent the school. In fact, it's embarrassing.
Okay, and I guess now is as good a time as any to talk about the other story that I think people all over the world have heard about, and that is the New York City subway chokehold death that somehow didn't involve cops. Instead, it involved a 24-year-old ex-Marine who, it was revealed after an unforgivable amount of time, I think. His name was finally revealed after he choked this guy to death, and He's from Long Island. Now, the reaction when people found out he was from Long Island, I don't think it's entirely fair. I mean, I can understand why people feel Long Island is this bastion for hate. Yeah, we just focused on those images ourselves a few minutes ago. But there is so much good as well. There are so many people who are fighting against that. So to simply say that, you know, he came from this awful place, and of course that makes perfect sense. He could have come from anywhere. He could have come from any place. And, yeah, he came from Long Island. In case you didn't know, this is the story about a guy named Jordan Neely, 30 years old. He was acting erratically on an F train a week ago Monday, and he was put into a chokehold by 24-year-old. Jordan Neely was black. The 24-year-old, even in this story that I'm reading right now, it's hard to find the guy's name. Yeah, 24-year-old white passenger from Long Island. This is what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, which I think is pretty much how I feel about this. Jordan Neely was murdered. But because Jordan was houseless and crying for food in a time when the city is raising rents and stripping services to militarize itself while many in power demonize the poor, the murderer gets protected with passive headlines and no charges. It's disgusting. And Kyle, well, I'm looking for the guy's name in this story. Could say how you feel about this. I cannot believe I still can't find his name here.
Well, the incident itself, it just seemed like this sort of vigilanteism was witnessed by a whole lot of people. The sort of virtuous activity that this guy felt he was protecting other people or subduing this person that was acting erratically, their judgment really wasn't professional. It wasn't the right thing. It was a overpowering an overwhelming amount of physical force, which is why that kind of vigilanteism isn't necessarily going to be a reliable way to handle problems. And I mean, you just never know what people are going through, especially on a subway. And I don't know how much this person takes public transit, the person that did the chokehold.
I found his name, but I had to go to a different story. This political story, for some reason, his name has been known for several days now, this story, which came out afterwards, did not mention Daniel Penny. That's his name. So at least his name is known now. I'm sorry, continue.
Sure. Yeah, I just don't want to go without saying that it's overwhelming and, you know, too much. This person died as a result of it. And we basically lose the fact that this is a person with a life that we don't know the circumstances. And to make a judgment that you have to use this kind of force is really a liability. You know, citizens should be there looking out for one another. Yes. Doing some sort of civil arrest or being, this kind of protector jumping in can be, you know, you can be overzealous. You can actually make mistakes. This goes the same way in medical situations and so forth. And people have to understand when you're in a public space and on the train, you're going to be around a lot of different types of people. I just fear that there's misunderstandings, misjudgments being made. And as you said, there consequences and looking back doesn't seem to be thorough enough in this case, and it just seems like it went wrong in a lot of ways.
Well, there have been all kinds of protests in New York City, and I think the response that those protests have gotten is very telling. If you're in New York City, you'll notice helicopters in the sky. a huge police presence, lots of arrest, violence. Look, the cops didn't kill this guy. Somebody beat you to it. You know, this citizen from Long Island did what you usually do. I guess they're offended that they didn't get, they were upstaged. You know, why are you coming after the people who are protesting that? They're not protesting you this time. They're protesting that. But now they're protesting the cops because of the way the cops have acted yet again. But look, here's the thing. This guy, from Long Island, I should say his name more, Daniel Penny. Why was his name kept out of the media? You know, if you're caught in any kind of a crime, let's say you get into an accident and you kill somebody, and you don't believe you did anything wrong, you believe it was just fate or something like that, your name is still going to be in the paper, all right? Your name is still going to be revealed. It won't be protected. This guy was protected. Why? Why was he protected like this? I don't get it. There's something weird about that.
Yeah, maybe like some aspect of the affiliations he had.
But, you know the name Eric Garner, right? You've heard of
him. I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, Eric Garner in 2014 died because cops put him in a chokehold in Staten Island. Now, and I should point out, too, that the chokehold was illegal. It's prohibited. They're not allowed to do that.
That's kind of
the cops are not allowed to do that.
Yeah, that's like
everybody in New York knows this. Everybody in New York has seen that story. So, you know, it's not just illegal for cops to put people in chokeholds. Or it shouldn't just be prohibited, is what I'm trying to say. It should be prohibited for everybody to do something like that because you can kill somebody, and that is exactly what happened in this particular case. So I don't accept that, oh, I didn't know what I was doing, or this happened accidentally. Look, you felt you needed to subdue somebody. You're an ex-Marine. I'm sure there's many ways you've been taught how to subdue somebody. You know, again, that's if you feel it's really necessary. I've seen many people on subway trains acting erratically, and you could even say intimidating, but I never felt the need to put them down, you know, to...
Yeah, you don't have to get involved. And I think, like, if there's judgment to be made, and I think this is just a horrible judgment call, but, like, obviously if someone's being attacked, I think, you know, getting bystanders and creating a way that you can separate that person from the victim and put a barrier and help resolve the situation, mm-hmm. That's one thing. I think that's important, but... this is a wholly different reaction.
Now, you know, when you say that you don't need to get involved, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you don't.
You don't need to put yourself in the front of every situation, but you do need to get involved if something bad is happening, if people are being hurt. And this is where I kind of veer off a little bit from what many people are saying here. I think a lot of people on that train should have gotten involved when they saw what Daniel Penny was doing to that guy. Now, there was one person filming it. Great, you got documentation, but you should have stepped in. You should have pushed him off, and so should other people. You know, obviously, you're not the person who did it, but by people just watching or not actively stopping this from happening tells me either you didn't care or you didn't realize what was happening. And that's a defense that Daniel Penny is going to use, that he didn't realize. He should know. He should know more than anybody. He's a Marine. You know, he's the one putting him in a chokehold. He's the one ultimately responsible. But let's not just take away any responsibility from all the people that were there as well, because they share some of that. Not the majority by far. But they do share some of that, and, they need to be held accountable. We need to do better when we see things like this happening. We can't just let it happen in front of us.
Were Daniel Penny in a uniform, I think people would have spoken up. They would have sympathized in some way. I think maybe it carries the weight of perceived authority and so forth by the state or
you know, the police and all that that carries, like, baggage-wise. So this instance, maybe the recognition, seeing a citizen sort of as a quote, hero in this situation, which is complete, you know, bull, but that created room for people to just witness, like you said, and just be passive, which was totally wrong. I mean, yeah, there's definitely some blame to go around.
Now, of course, Mayor Eric Adams is getting a lot of criticism. You might have heard some of it on the show before us, Democracy Now!, as is Kathy Hochul, although Kathy Hochul has walked back her initial remarks. She didn't really take a strong position on her on the case. But she has since said that she's pleased the district attorney is looking into this matter. There have to be consequences. We'll see how this unfolds. His family deserves justice. This was an unarmed individual who had been on the subways many times, known by many of the regular travelers, and sometimes people have an episode where they're displaying their feelings in a loud and emotional way. But it became very clear that he was not going to cause harm to these other people. And the video of three individuals holding him down until the last breath was snuffed out of him, I would say, was a very extreme response. That's that's what Kathy Hochul is saying. While Eric Adams is basically holding this position that I don't think it's very responsible at a time when we're still investigating the situation to be commenting on this. Let's let the DA conduct his investigation with law enforcement officials. To interfere with that is not the right thing to do. We cannot just blatantly say what a passenger should or should not do in a situation like that. No, you know what? I think you can. I think you can say that it's not okay to kill somebody. All right, let's start with that. Let's start by saying it's wrong to kill somebody in a subway for acting erratically or for being loud and possibly intimidating. All right, we'll start there. And then we'll say, is it right to use a chokehold on somebody? You know, not with the intention of killing them. I think that's wrong as well. And I think we should make that very clear. When the mayor does not make that clear, that sends a very bad message. But again, this guy was a cop. This guy used to be a policeman in New York City. And he was elected mayor. No, he was not elected mayor. He was elected by Democrats. Okay? Democrats chose this guy over other progressive candidates in the primary. No Republicans, just Democrats. They chose an ex-cop. So, you know, before we start saying we have to get all these more left-leaning people elected and more progressive-thinking people, let's look at the reality of the situation and realize that Democrats aren't as progressive as we would like them to be. So, you know, when people are endorsed by one group of people over another, it might not be realistic. Let's remember this. New York City. New York City, where you would think Democrats would be super liberal, they picked a cop. So
this is the fallout.
This is what happens when you do that, yes, but let's also not make the mistake of thinking that we can do better when you realize what people choose when given the chance.
But there are going to be blind spots.
We might have to hold our noses and just accept a candidate that's not as, you know, not what we want because it's not realistic. I wish it were, but this sure proves that.
Yeah, there's a cost.
Wow. That said, you know, I don't like the demonization of Long Island. I know a lot of that is Long Island's fault. Do I think this guy went in there with the intention to kill? No, probably didn't. Probably did not want to do that, but still showed incredible lack of thought, maybe even disdain for this person. There was no reason to do that. So I know some people are calling for murder one or whatever. I don't know what the specific charge should be, but it definitely should be something, and it should be something severe. You killed somebody that was not really threatening anybody. Might have been intimidating people, might have been loud, might have been unpleasant. In New York City, you learn to deal with things like this. In fact, in the whole country, you should learn how to deal with things like this in a better way. And also look at the bigger problem. You know, people walking around without enough food, without a place to live. How do we fix that? Yeah, I heard a statistic on the radio in the last week that to keep somebody at Rikers or in prison costs about $500,000 a year, whereas to keep them in housing would be $50,000, a tenth of that. And if that's true, there is just no excuse for what we're seeing today. No excuse at all. This just happened. A jury has found Donald Trump liable for sexual abuse and defamation. Six men, three women, awarded the writer E. Jean Carroll $5 million in damages. I don't believe she was even asking for damages. She got $5 million in damages. Yeah, the Manhattan jury today, just a couple of hours ago, found former President Donald J. Trump liable for the sexual abuse and defamation of the magazine writer E. Jean Carroll, and awarded her $5 million in damages in a widely watched civil trial that sought to apply the accountability of the Me Too era to a dominant political figure. The federal jury returned its verdict shortly after 3 p.m. after deliberating for only a few hours. Imagine that, unanimous, only a few hours. Boy, that's a pretty strong case. The jury found that Ms. Carroll had not proved by a preponderance of the evidence that Mr. Trump had raped her, as she had long claimed, but the jury did find he had sexually abused her. Jury members had the option of finding Mr. Trump liable for sexual abuse or for forcible touching, which are less serious charges than rape under state law. And the jury found that 76-year-old Trump, people need to say that more, 76-year-old Donald Trump defamed Ms. Carroll when he posted a statement on his Truth Social website in October calling her case a complete con job and a hoax and a lie. For some reason, hoax is capitalized. So, you know, people are still going to defend him. You know, he's been found liable by a jury. I wish he had been found guilty by a criminal jury. But this is, I guess, the best that this case can offer at this point. But they're still going to defend him. They're still going to say, doesn't matter, doesn't count. Guy found liable for sexual abuse. That's the kind of person you want running. Saw a poll today that showed Trump beating Biden. Biden's approval rating at the lowest level ever. What is wrong with us? What is wrong with us? You know, gas prices are lower than they ever were under Trump. The economy is doing just fine. I mean, yeah, it could be doing better for a lot of people, but I'm sick of people saying under Trump it was much better. No, it wasn't. It wasn't better under Trump. What was better under Trump was the tax rate for rich people.
Yeah, yacht sales.
Yeah, that was better. But it sure wasn't better for people on the other side. My taxes went way up under Trump. They really did. People don't say that enough, but it's certainly true. Unless unless you're a billionaire.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were paying out of pocket. And that while we were like getting absurd red herrings like you can file your taxes on a postcard and all that crud. I mean, it was absurd. So
yeah.
We need to start having something other than polling to trust, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the polls are very optimistic generally for the current administration. So I don't know. Maybe it's just not cool enough to participate in polls.
I like to think that the polls aren't really measuring people as far as voters. They're
people
who just aren't happy. I'm not happy. If someone calls me and says, are you happy with the current situation? And I say, no. Because Donald Trump is still walking around a free man, and because there's fascists and Nazis, you know, in growing numbers, maybe that counts as somehow Biden not being popular because he's in charge.
There is a confluence of negativity for that's like it coming in all different forms for a lot of reasons. And I think to some degree there's a willful sort of sabotage going on, politically at least. You can look to the House of Representatives for evidence of that and various other forms of sort of scuttling, because there's this bitterness politically and, now culturally around the Democrats and President Biden, especially going into these sort of early general primary days.
Okay, mass shooting time. You know, we should just have a section, mass shooting in Texas time, because
it's crazy.
It seems to just be gravitating towards there. And who can be surprised by that? People are practically encouraged to carry guns with them now. And no real concern over their mental state or their ability to handle them. So, yeah, there was another horrible shooting by a neo-Nazi in, I believe, the Austin area at an outdoor mall. 8 people killed. I'd rather just focus on this House bill in Texas, Bill 2744, that basically would prohibit selling, renting, leasing, or giving a semi-automatic rifle with a caliber greater than 22 that is capable of accepting a detachable magazine to a person younger than 21 years old. I look at something like this and I say, yeah, okay, that's good, I guess, but does that really help? Well, it can, I suppose, you know, is that those 3 years. But, you know, you're not making it really impossible for people under 21 to get these guns. You're just making it possible to prohibit them from buying them or renting them and technically being given them by another person. But it just seems like such a small step. Anyway, even that seemed doomed to failure. But in an unexpected move, following a rally and a press conference, a meeting for the committee that was looking at this bill was announced from the House floor yesterday. And during that meeting, the committee voted 8-5 to advance the bill to the full chamber, with Republican state representatives Sam Harless of Spring, I believe is what the area is called, and Justin Holland of Rockwall joining Democrats in the vote. Now, when this happened, the celebrations were simply phenomenal. People were basically treating it like they won the Super Bowl. And I get it, you know, it's something that nobody thought could happen, that this could actually be voted out of committee. But here's what's ahead. Now it has to be accepted into the calendar. Apparently that's a struggle too, just to have it even be heard. Then after that, it has to be voted on and passed by the legislature. And then after that, the state Senate has to get involved and also pass it. And then after that, Governor Abbott has to sign it. And we know he's not going to sign it. And when he doesn't sign it or rejects it, vetoes it, you need 2/3 of both bodies to override him. And you know that's not going to happen. So what are people celebrating for? You know, this ridiculously small change in the law that has absolutely no chance of going anywhere and just got out of the bare minimum so it could even be considered before it's roundly rejected by these idiots. Well, I'll tell you. Imagine you've been in a horrific accident and you're paralyzed. You're completely paralyzed. You'll never walk again. And you're sitting there in the hospital bed. You have all your friends, your relatives around you, and people are sobbing, upset at how things have gone. And then it just happens where you're able to move your toe. And people see that. They see your big toe just move a smidgen. Well, do you think people are going to say, oh, that's nothing, doesn't matter, there's so much more to go? Or do you think they will celebrate and say, oh, my God, he's going to beat the odds? You know, he has a chance. He's moving his toe when the doctor said he'd never walk again. He would never have feeling again. Well, yesterday the big toe moved. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. And even if this time it doesn't work, there will be more times. As certain as I know there'll be more shootings. It's pathetic. It's disgusting. It should make all of us angry. So when you see the celebrations, yeah, you could say they're meaningless, but they mean something to the people that are fighting. Because every victory is a step. And we have a lot of steps to go. And I sure hope that we never lose our faith. We never lose our confidence that eventually sanity will prevail. Because, boy, sanity is not prevailing right now. It's insane. It is totally insane that elected officials will just continue to let this happen. I guarantee you, if the elected officials felt the same amount of trepidation and fear that the average citizen felt, they'd act. They would do something. But they're always protected. You know? You can't have your guns anywhere near them. No. But the rest of you, yeah, you know what? Deal with it. It's what the Founding Fathers wanted. Disgusting. We got an interesting letter about this and some other things we were discussing last week. Just off the wall, last week's show sparked my curiosity about a couple of things. I decided to get out my my candy thermometer and check the temperature of my tea. We were talking about hot coffee last week. When I pour the water from the kettle, it's about 165 degrees, 75 Celsius. I expected it to register hotter than that, closer to boiling. Still, it's far too hot for me to drink at that temperature. I let it steep and cool down a bit. I often forget about it, and it cools down too much, so I reheat it in the microwave. I concluded the ideal drinking temperature for me is about 125 Fahrenheit, 50 Celsius. I like it hot, but not so hot that it dulls my taste buds. And Kyle, the coffee was not as hot this week, and that's fine.
Yes, I staggered it a little bit. I left the boiling water out just a few minutes longer, and then, yeah.
The other thing has to do with the Great Lakes. That Gordon Lightfoot song, which we played last week in memory of the great singer's passing, that song begins with a Native American name for Lake Superior. I was curious what the names of the others might be, in particular Lake Erie. Gitche-Gumee isn't exactly the native name. It's a truncated, easier for non-natives to pronounce version. The full proper name is Ochipewi-Kitchikami, which I probably mangled, which means the Sea of the Ojibwe people. Lake Erie is Erie Honan, which means long tail. That that song reminds me of car rides. The record of the Edmund Fitzgerald is what we played last week. It reminds me of car rides from my mother when I was very young. It had a lot of FM radio play during the late 1970s and early 1980s. Gitche-Gumee is a fun name for a toddler to say. I was too young then to appreciate the sorrowful tale it told. But it brought tears to my eyes tonight when I heard it again. I don't want to talk about all the shootings, but that recent one in Texas, and what's crazy here is the recent one in Texas is no longer the recent one in Texas.
Yeah, there was a more recent one in Texas.
At least one more. We're over 200 mass shootings in this country this year alone. Anyway, the recent one in Texas points to something that not everyone in this country can understand. This is the one where the neighbor killed an entire family because they dared to ask him to stop firing his gun at night. Regrettably, I can relate to that neighborhood. Had we known what this town we moved to was like, we would have chosen somewhere else if we could. The sound of semi-automatic gunfire, we hear it weekly, if not daily. And it seldom, if ever, has anything to do with hunting. Conservative media will try to make it about race and immigration. It's a despicable lie. And I wonder how many of our listeners live in places where the sound of gunfire is predominant. You hear it all the time. And especially semi-automatic gunfire. Here in our town, most, if not all, the shooting comes from white people who fancy themselves in the war against whatever they think Antifa is. They day drink on their Confederate flag draped porches, then take off on their ATVs into the strip of woods that surrounds the town where they shoot off their assault rifles and set off explosives. The nicer the weather, the worse it is around here. Between the gunfire and the garbage fires they like to huddle around while drinking, there are some days I can't go out in my own yard. The only time I saw the local cops do anything about it was when they were shooting from the parking lot of the low-income housing development across the street from where we live while children were playing outside. One of them lived next door to us for a few years. Thankfully, his rich girlfriend left him, and he couldn't make rent anymore and had to move out. But he had what you would call an arsenal, and always open carried, even while grilling in his backyard. I call people like that animals and names far worse, but not to their faces for obvious reasons. I never saw such a crazy country. I'm sorry that it's the only one I've ever known. I keep hoping things will get better on all fronts, but it's just so bad right now. I have no more tolerance for those who indulge that kind of behavior and thinking. Quote-unquote, both sides is such nonsense. They all parrot the same few lines in response to any pushback. Conservative media is like one of those old-fashioned toys where you turn the dial to a picture of an animal, then pull the string, and it says something like, "The cow says moo." I've heard the same tired lines and excuses so many times that I can write their scripts for them. Sorry for going on a bit. No apologies necessary here. But there's been a lot going on. I hope to get some gardening done this weekend, weather and wannabe militia permitting. Thank you, T.L. Jordan, for that that really good letter from the heart that I think a lot of people in our listening audience might identify with. We should not have to live in fear of neighbors or rednecks in the neighborhood that have way too much armament at their disposal and a lot of anger. Ain't right. It's not how we should be living. And unfortunately, it's become the norm for so many.
Yeah, I'm with that sentiment of just like not being so tolerant of the both sides thing with so much craziness and zealotry and just paranoia and distrust, adding weapons into the mix of that and the cultural hyperbole all around is just so dangerous, such a powder keg in any moment. And hopefully it dies down. Hopefully people, get outside and garden or go on vacation and fish or, go to the beach, whatever they got to do. And maybe don't bring your weapons.
These people with the guns, they should be out gardening.
Yeah.
Have them do that instead. You know, something positive. There's nothing positive here. There really isn't.
You can get a lot of exercise, upper body strength, but with a garden hoe or a spade or whatever, and you're just digging.
Yeah, you injured yourself during a lot of digging.
I got a little bit of a little sprain. I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
You're very welcome.
That's fine. No, but I'm just saying, if you need to like vent a little bit, making a little garden plot, doing some double digging, that'll do you good. But who am I to suggest anything?
My phone just alerted me. It alerted me that the sprinkling is complete in one of the gardens.
Yes.
We have an app now that does that. But we also got an alert, a news alert. George Santos, you might remember him, the Republican congressman who lied extensively on the campaign trail, has been charged by federal prosecutors in New York. Oh, it's a busy week in New York, isn't it? Oh, I look forward to more on that story. By the way, what the letter writer wrote about those children's toys where, you pull the string, the cow says moo.
Yeah.
I figured out when I was a kid how to make those change. Like, if you have one of these, I don't mean the ones where you press something. You have to have the string. You pull the string, and then the string – what I'm describing is something right? It's
mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not something archaic then. Okay. So you get it to say the cow goes, and as soon as that is said – you tug on the string, and it'll play a different animal. I used to do that for my relatives, they would think something was wrong with the toy because the cow goes meow. Wait a minute, that's not supposed to say that. But I would be tugging on the string without them seeing me do that, and it was great fun.
It is called the CNC.
See, okay, those ones you're looking at on the screen, do any of them have strings, or are they the
They all have strings.
Okay, good. So if you have one of those, or if you can get one of those on eBay or something like that, it's worth it. Hours of fun, guaranteed.
These are the original CNC toys.
Yeah.
And it basically is mechanical. So it has a string that is wound, and depending on where the arrow's positioned, what animal, as you said, it will make the sound.
Hey, let's end on some good news. You want to do that? We started with some good news. Let's end on some good news. There is a Canadian TV show that Kyle and I have watched every Tuesday following our show, because it's on Tuesday nights on Canadian TV, which we're able to receive. It's called Son of a Critch, and it's about this guy whose name is Mark Critch. He actually is one of the hosts of another show called This Hour Has 22 Minutes.
Which is hilarious. It's a sketch news show.
It's a farcical news program. A lot of Canadian humor that might not land with Americans, but it's, you know, if you give yourself the opportunity to learn about that, you'll appreciate it. Anyway, he grew up in Newfoundland, which is an incredible place. If you ever get the chance to go there, you can drive to Newfoundland from here. Why don't you do that, people? Why don't you just get in your car, drive across the border and go through Nova Scotia and take the boat from Nova Scotia to Newfoundland and drive around and explore the place. It's an incredible province. Labrador and Newfoundland, or Newfoundland and Labrador, I think is how you say it. One is an island, one is part of the mainland. It used to be its own country until, I think, the 40s or something. And that's why, radio stations there don't all begin with C. So, that's something to remember. Mark Critch grew up there, and this show is the story of his, early life, I believe in seventh grade.
Yeah, I think it's based on his memoir or something.
Yeah, it is. And so basically you have the story of this kid. He's 11 years old, but he actually, inside is much older than that. And just the various things that he goes through in his life, which are very different from what you might experience here. He shares a room with his grandfather, played by Malcolm McDowell, who you might remember from, as Alex in Clockwork Orange and Star Trek and various other things. Amazing actor, but just really interesting humor. Anyway, the good news is it's coming to American TV, finally. The CW has basically made a deal to bring it to their network this summer. That's something to look forward to, and it's something that I never thought would actually happen. But now with the writer's strike, I think they're looking for more shows from other countries, and yeah, you know what? They speak our language in Canada and other countries as well. We should be looking at more things from other lands and
more
appreciating them.
Indeed, more variety, more more like distinct stories and stories from afar. I think that's never a bad way to go as far as programming. And there's been so much sameness with medical and police serial, dramas and so forth.
Well, we have to go. We have to go. We are out of time. Finn is up next. And we want to close with a song all about Newfoundland.
Well, it's been wonderful speaking with you.
OTW at 2600.com. We'll see you next week. Good night.
We'll rant and we'll roar like true Newfoundlanders. We'll rant and we'll roar on deck and below, until we see bottom inside the two sunkers. Then straight through the channel to Tazlo we'll go. I'm the son of a sea cook and a cook and a trader. I can dance, I can sing, I can reef the main boom. I can handle a jigger and I cuts a fine figure whenever I gets in a boat standing room. My name it is Robert, they call me Bob Pittman. I sail in the I know with Skipper Tom Brown. I'm bound to have Polly or Biddy or Molly just as soon as I'm able to plank the cash down. We'll rant and we'll roar like true Newfoundlanders. We'll rant and we'll roar on deck and below, until we see bottom inside the two sunkers. Then straight through the channel to Tazlo we'll go. If the voyage is good, then this fall I will do it. I want £2.10 for a ring and a priest, a couple of dollars for clinkers and collars, and a handful of coppers to make up a piece. I went to a dance one night in Fox Harbor. There was plenty of girls as nice as you wished.
There was one pretty maiden, a John on Frankham, just like a young kitten and on fresh fish. We'll rant and we'll roar like true Newfoundlanders. We'll rant and we'll roar on deck and below, until we see bottom inside the two sunkers. Then straight through the channel to Tazlow we'll go. There's plump little Polly, her name is Goldsworthy. There's John Cody's Kitty and Mary Thibault. There's Clara from Brulee and young Martha Foley. But the nicest of all is me girl from Tazlow. Farewell and adieu to ye girls of Box Harbor, Old Deerham and Press, Crabs Hole and Brulee. I'm bound to the westward, to the wall with the hole in, for I can't marry all or in the trophy I'd be. We'll rant and we'll roar like true Newfoundlanders. We'll rant and we'll roar on deck and below, until we see bottom inside the two sunkers. Then straight through the channel to Tazlow we'll go.